What's going on, Justin?
Hey, man, how are you?
Doing well, doing well. This is the Eric Swan Racing.com podcast. We'll just jump right into it with Justin Paciencia. I hope I said that right. And it's about episode number 89 or 90, I believe.
Yeah, it gets butchered all the time. It's Pacinese.
Pacinese. Very good. And so you're a Moto America a crew worker. You're a mechanic of sorts. You've been on the Wyman Brigade for quite a few years now.
Yeah, I've been with them for a couple of years now. Started out with Kyle, and he kind of changed directions with his program for now, and went over and started helping out with Travis.
Yeah, for sure. I talked to Travis a couple months ago on here, and I got to know him, got to know a little bit about what he's doing as far as the training side. You know, I was impressed. I didn't know, you know, obviously he's a pro racer, but he's also an open wheel coach. He's a sports car coach, and he's a motorcycle racing coach. It's like anything on the racetrack, he's all about.
Yeah, he definitely wears a lot of hats, especially off season. Like, that guy is, he's going to the Carolinas or back to Vegas and just doing like the rider coaching thing or the car. I know he's really big with the Ford school there.
Yeah, Ford Performance sounds like a big deal.
Because he just had me out at his house a couple weeks ago, and he's got like this really cool like sim racing setup too. So we were like going back and forth all weekend. Like, he'd throw down a banger and I'd be like, I'm trying to get you. So like, it'd be start, restart all night like for me.
Oh, yeah. Just trying to be perfect around one single lap, right?
Yeah, but just like, you saw his sector times. I'm like, I can get it. But I'm like, no, I'm not catching him. This is stupid.
Does he make it up in braking or acceleration or in corners, you think?
It's like,
because so I mean, you've been around the racetrack for a long time now. You understand a lot about the line and what to do, right?
No, absolutely. And he knows so well, like when that brake marker comes up and how much pressure to apply, and he gets in the corner and he's just not sloppy with the throttle. Like, he just kind of like gets in, gets settled, and then it's just like this smooth drive out. And I'm just like coming in, just like, just trying to blow through the corner. And he's just cracking up, laughing at me the whole time. So,
yeah, man, I remember there was one time my cousin came over and we were playing this, it was Gran Turismo at the time, PS4. And it was at the Nürburgring. You know how they have those sections where you got to get like a certain time for that section licenses or whatever?
Yeah.
He was doing it like 50 times and he was like a tenth away. He couldn't find it. And my first time on it, I cleared it by, you know, a little, just enough. And he's like, how'd you do that? First try? Are you kidding me? I was like, well, I just saw you make all the mistakes, so I knew not to make them.
Right.
But it's like, it's so frustrating when that person is just so much, or just a little bit ahead, and you can't find that time.
Yeah, it's really cool to see like how they see things, like, because you just watch them and you're just like, you'll see them do something and you're just like, oh, like I wouldn't have tried that, or I wouldn't have seen it the way you see it. And it's just like, dang, like, and that's kind of like the pros. I mean, they have that something extra to push.
It's that confidence. You just have to assume it's going to work out.
Yeah. Mine is just close my eyes and hope.
But yeah, man, it's good to connect with you. And so tell me what it's like being a crew chief for a guy at the top superbike level. Or not a crew chief, but a mechanic at least, you know, working on the bikes and making sure everything is A-okay before he goes out there.
I mean, it's a lot of fun for sure. But it's also work too. So, I mean, you know, you get a lot of fans that come up and they're just like, oh, this is so great. This is so great. They kind of like think it's like a huge party the whole time. But it's just like,
yeah,
no, like we're at the track till 8, 9 o'clock at night, like, you know, wrenching on the bike. And, you know, we're up at 6 again to get to the track before, you know, the first session. So so it is work. And knowing what you do applies to what he does on track. So it's just like, you know, you're always making sure you did it everything correctly the first time. And even when he's out there, like, did I tighten that right? Did I do this right? Like,
yeah,
you're just hoping. And then, you know, every session, you know, he goes out and you're hoping he feels good with the bike and the changes that the team has made. Cause it is difficult though when they come in and they're not happy, and it's not really necessarily like anything the team did, but it's just like how he feels on the bike. So, you know, we're all working hard together and just wanting everything to work and, you know, drive. But so it's just like, all right, back to the drawing board. Like, what can we do? So it's like, you know, it's give and take with him. And so it's like, you know, when he comes back in, you're just hoping like, he's like, yeah, it feels good. But, you know, racers, they always want more speed and more power. So they're not always 100% happy.
Yeah. And a lot of people are, there's different personalities of different riders who think, oh, every time I'm not doing well, it's always the bike's fault. Or sometimes the riders are more of like, oh, it's me, I'm not taking that corner right. But most of the time it's somewhere in between, right?
No, absolutely. And like, you know, they have their tracks, and I mean, you know, even being on a bike yourself, like you get in those moments or those grooves where you're like, I just don't like this layout. I don't like, you know, how these corners are, and just like you just don't get comfortable. But then there's you go to a track that you really, really like, and it's like, this flow is nice. So yeah. It's just like, you know, every rider, they deal with it. Like, they got their favorites and they got their least favorites, and it's just, you know, kind of finding that compromise with setup.
Really. Yeah, and I'm sure different tracks like Circuit of the Americas in Texas is going to be a pretty difficult track to set up, because they have everything at that track. You know, long straightaways, they got the quadruple apex right. Some pretty hard hairpin turns going on the long straightaways. So I see your dog down there. Didn't want to forget about him or her.
Oh, that's Charlie. He's trying to get his 10 minutes.
A little bit of fame.
Yeah.
He's like, you're doing something important. Let me say hi.
Yeah, he'll be way more popular than me. but yeah, so it's weird when you do go to tracks, because, you know, it is all about setup. But like you said, like, every track has different corners and different layouts. So it's like you almost set the bike up to be like broad enough for each corner. I mean, it'd be great if you could just set the bike up per corner. And then, you know, they'd be, you know, thrilled. But it's just like, yeah, you have a hairpin here, but then you got a long dog leg sweeper here. So it's like the bike's going to react differently. So it's just like you almost have to find that happy medium. Like, it's happy here, it's okay here. Like, you know, maybe you can make up the rest, because it's not always, that setup's not always going to be perfect.
Right. It's all about that compromise between having too stiff or not stiff enough, and all different settings. It's like infinite how many things you could change.
Yeah, because one part of the track will feel great, but then, you know, you go to a different part of the track and, you know, the setup or suspension's off because those type of corners are different than, you know, what he's really liking or feeling. So it's just like you know you do want to just find that medium sweet spot, like that nice delta in between everything, because there's not one perfect setup. It's just what feels good enough to push, you know, to
yeah, and you might have been going to Daytona, for instance, for 10 years, but Brainerd might be the first time you're ever there, so you don't have anything to go with. You don't really have a base setup.
No, for sure. And it's nice with the bike that we have had, is because, you know, we have that previous data and all the settings and stuff for the times that he's gone there. So we have a decent baseline to go from or start with, but we're always making changes. Like, I don't think there's ever been a time where we've gone on the track and didn't touch anything.
Yeah. And now you're starting to get some sort of aerodynamic packages coming from overseas. So that's a new thing in the series.
Yeah. Especially like the, you know, the manufacturers, you know, they're keep trying to keep up with MotoGP and do the wings and everything. So they get homologated in because it's production. So it kind of helps out, and, you know, that definitely changes the bike for them as well.
Probably a lot more downforce in the braking zones or high speed areas.
Yeah. He hasn't done a bike yet with the wings. I know he's tested some things, but there's been no like press release yet, so can't really talk about much.
Understandable.
About what he's doing. I mean, I wish I could, because it is pretty cool.
Yeah. And do you think we'll eventually see those wings trickle down to like the super sport or even the junior class?
As far as like those categories, it's just like the manufacturers don't really spend that much with those bikes anymore. Like, you know, back in the heyday, it'd be like every 2 years they're designing a new bike. And now it's, you know, maybe we're good every 10 years or so. So, and like the cost to make a 600 is just as expensive to make a 1000. So it's, they don't really try to trickle anything down to like the middleweight bikes. That's why I think the rules, you know, started to change to kind of encompass that broad aspect of everything below a liter bike, is, you know, essentially for, you know, super bike. Cause then hopefully that will like get the, you know, the manufacturers like excited again and maybe try, but it's just like, you know, those sales have been kind of dead and stagnant for so long. It's just trying to bring new hype, because sadly, we don't even see like a CBR 600 in those classes anymore. Or, you know, the Gixxer, I don't know when the last time that thing's been changed. So, and then, you know, the R6, they're only selling that as a race package.
It's kind of like wild. You know, it's an end of an era. It's a start of a new one. And it's going to be interesting to see how this new rules package affects racing. And there will be way more manufacturers. So that sounds like a good thing on paper.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, it's going to take probably a couple races for them to get it sorted, because, you know, they kind of just go out with a blank slate and they'll try to detune or neuter bikes kind of like by lap. Like, all right, this bike's doing this certain lap time, you know, let's restrict it because these bikes are only doing X lap time. But, you know, that will change per track. You know, like one bike might be strong here and then, you know, this other bike is, you know, excels there. So it's almost trying to find that happy medium. But I know that this year is just definitely going to be like a learning year for everybody, which I'm excited, but then also kind of like disappointed to see just like that go away.
Yeah, I think it would be cool to have both, like keep the Super Sport 600 stock class and then have the Super Sport, you know, built class, and the 600, I think would be a cool thing to keep, but maybe there's time restrictions. They don't have as, you know, enough time for practice and qualifying to stick a whole new class in there. So they had to just modify the one they have.
Yeah, because it was cool, you know, back in the AMA days when they had like, you know, the stock 600 class, but then they had the Superbike 600 class. So it's like, you know, they had, you know, these varying classes, but then, you know, Daytona took over the AMA, and we all know how that went. So it's like glad that Moto America picked it back up, and, you know, it's been going well, and I'm super happy for Moto America, and especially when you go to the tracks and you see all the fans that are like camping out for the weekend, and it, you know, just gives you hope, like the series is being revived and, you know, we're getting more people into the series, because, you know, the fans are what keeps it going. Like if nobody shows up, there's going to be no racing. So yeah, it's always great to see how many people do come out. So hopefully the fans like, you know, their new classes or the new rules, especially like the baggers and the hooligan stuff is pretty neat. Cause I'll be honest, like when they first introduced like the baggers, I was just like, you know, probably like everybody just like, meh, whatever. Like, what is this? But then like the first time they're out on track, I was like, oh my God, like this is awesome.
They're like normally 800-900 pound machines stripped down and made race ready to maybe 600-ish pounds.
Yeah, it's, and like the bags still have to open and close and lock. Yeah.
Have to be working bags that, although they don't have to carry anything in them.
So it's just nuts, like to think about those bikes you see on the street, you know, just people just kind of cruising for the day, and then these guys are doing, you know, stock 1000 lap times on those bikes. So it's just like, oh my gosh. Like,
well, they're extremely powerful. They're more powerful probably than a stock 1000, but not so great in the corners.
Yeah, definitely heavier. And they don't have the electronics package, you know, traction control, all that. So it is kind of cool to see like that old kind of racing way, you know.
Yeah.
Everything's analog and it's in your hand. So it's it's super, super neat. And yeah, I have a newfound respect for that class, and like I'm super excited that they're doing more of those more races this year.
Yeah, I think they have 4 to 6 rounds, I think.
I think it's 6 or 7 now.
Is it that many? Wow.
Yeah. So it's because last year it was 3, and then it was cool to see Harley come out and just kind of throw everything at it. And you know, it was the first time they had a factory team in I can't even tell you how many years, but
probably since the old XR 750s, was it? They had a XR class racing at AMA for a couple of years.
Oh yeah, the spec class, but I'm not sure if that was like full factory.
I got you. Yeah.
Work, but it's cool to see them, you know, back in it, and how fast they're trickling down the stuff they're doing in Moto America to their you know, the bikes they sell on the road. So it's super, super neat, and just like to witness.
Yeah. I heard talks of Harley getting into making some sort of sport bike. Do you think they're going to actually go that route?
I wish I could talk about it.
Plus the confidentiality.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's talks, and what the talks have been are pretty cool, and it'd be great to see.
E-bikes, electric bikes. I think most of the manufacturers are being forced to go that route almost.
Yeah, and they have an e-bike that Travis and them got to test out, and you know, they really enjoyed it, and were, you know, kind of surprised by that package. So it's neat, and I can't wait till it does come out and like, you know, they can share it. But
yeah,
it is kind of cool to be behind the scenes to get to see some of the stuff before people do too. So it's like, you know, kind of, because he'll show me stuff on his phone, like, but so he won't text it to me, but he'll just be like, hey, check this out. And it's like, oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, kind of thing. So it's not getting leaked, but.
Heck yeah. Yeah, I think maybe in a couple of years we'll have an e-bike class in Moto America.
That'd be interesting. It'll almost be like kind of like that hooligans class they're doing.
Yeah.
That class is pretty cool too. It's just kind of run what you brung and just send it pretty much.
Is there any sort of like CC rules for the hooligan class? I'm not too much familiar with the hooligans.
I'm not too familiar with it myself, because they actually had a couple e-bikes in that race at Laguna. Now that I remember, but it's kind of broad. Like, you know, you got some Harley stuff out there, but then you got like a KTM, like Duke. So it's just like
the Supermoto.
Yeah, like the spectrum is pretty huge. So it's almost like you can almost run anything. And but I need to get familiar with those rules. But it's a good race to watch.
Talking about the baggers at Laguna, I remember one of the years. Don't think you can't loop a Harley, because you definitely can.
Yeah.
Out of the pits. Oh,
who was that looped it?
I think it was an older guy, wasn't it?
I don't know if it was Garcia or Frankie Garcia or somebody else.
Babuska, maybe?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about, because, yeah, they're trying to practice launch and said...
It was 12 o'clock, dude.
Sent that thing to 12 o'clock.
But I think you walked away okay, but it looked like a pretty nasty one.
Yeah, I definitely don't want to be, you know, behind the handlebars when that thing goes down. That's a heavy bike to crash.
And I've been a track marshal, corner working at many different weekends so far, and I'm thinking, man, I hope one of those doesn't crash in my corner, because that's going to be a doozy to pick up.
Yeah, like you're going to like need a spotter, like, hey, come help me pick this dang thing up.
Yeah, I mean, even through some of the gravel traps at Barber, like, you're going to need more than one person to push it through some of those gravel traps.
Because, yeah, those gravel traps are deep.
They're thick, man. It's tough, even if you're not injured, just to push a bike through there. I'm hoping the rider's going to be able to help me.
Yeah, right. Just have, like, a winch in the corner, just drag the bike through.
some of the guys bring like a chalk for the front tire, because imagine the bike is destroyed, like, and the tire isn't even on the rim anymore. How are you going to push the bike through the gravel trap? You put it on like a little chalk, and then you just drag the front, and someone pushes from the back.
So yeah, I've seen like they kind of like sling a loop
or a bar. Yeah.
Yeah, try and drag it through there. Just like, oh,
it's a workout.
Like, all right, I need five after this.
Yeah, and even a standard bike is, well, I'm not sure the Junior Cup bikes, but at least the 600 is going to be 400 pounds.
Yeah, the minimum that they're supposed to be is right around that number for sure. Kind of like that stock 600 number. I'm not sure if the rules change now because of the bikes that they're letting in, but yeah, it's still pretty heavy.
I like seeing on, like watching Moto 3, they just pick up the bike in the pit lane and just move the rear tire. I'm like,
they grab it by the foot peg. They're just like, whoop. Like, all right, that'd be fun to work on that thing.
Yeah. But they have some pretty unique packages now, but all the MotoGP bikes have external starters, but all the Moto America bikes have starters on the bike. Is that right?
Yeah, everything's still electric start. They're not, because they don't really do like them crazy, crazy superbike motors anymore. I know for like the middleweight, I'm still going to call it like the middleweight class, but like, I know those, they're allowing more engine tuning kind of to make up for, you know, the displacement in horsepower with the other bikes. So like now I know you can just kind of pretty much make a superbike R6 to kind of compete with like a V2. Which,
yeah,
it's going to get expensive for some people. And, you know, I think a lot of people are probably going to come out the gate with like that Ducati, just because it's just like, it's race ready as is. Like, you don't need to do as much to kind of get it up to speed. Especially and it's kind of neat, like the Gixxer 750. I know they have to, in the rules, they want fly by wire, and the Gixxer 750 doesn't have fly-by-wire from the factory. So I think they're working with like M4 to come up with a package so they can put that on the bike, so race control can, you know, essentially control it if they need to kind of see, like, you know, some 750s on the grid for sure.
Yeah, one of my buddies, Carl Soltes, I think is running the Suzuki Gixxer 750, I believe, and he'll be at the Daytona 200, and he's doing the full season of the Moto America. So he's a hometown guy from Michigan, so I've been following him for a while.
No, yeah, because he's been on the R6 for a while.
Yeah, he made the switch over. I think he's on the Disrupt Racing team, and you know, looking to do the full season is a big step from being a one-off, you know, privateer for the last couple of years. So I'm excited for him.
Yeah, and I listened to the podcast he did with Crothers and Vice, and it was pretty good to kind of hear his background and everything.
Yeah,
kind of like a newfound respect for him too. So and I'm excited to see what he's going to do this year, because he is fast, but now to be on like a proper bike with a proper team, it's just not him, you know, turning wrenches. So it'll be cool to see what he's got for everybody,
for sure. And you know, he's one of the guys who got me into doing supermoto and all that stuff. And supermoto, mini riding, whether it's 50s or 100s, 250s, 450s, all that stuff. It's so cheap. The smiles to dollar ratio is off the charts. And when you crash a bike, there's no damage. I mean, there's local tracks all around you, kart tracks and supermoto tracks. This one up in Auto City, Clio, Michigan is awesome. And they just take it's an old NASCAR track, an oval of sorts, and they make a their own track using tires on it, so you can go kind of both directions and separate it enough so that's safe. You can use both sides of the track.
That's pretty cool.
And then they have like 15% of dirt that they've made themselves. And the track, it's hard to find a racetrack that's going to let you build and bring machines in and like make your own section. Because they're like, you're going to ruin our surface. You know, you're going to ruin everything. It's been a cool experience doing that.
Yeah, so here in Colorado, like, I wish we had more of those, like going to the go-kart indoor facilities and be able to run those bikes. Because, yeah, seeing those videos online, it's like, man, that'd be so much fun.
Yeah.
And like, there's a couple in Denver, but it's just like too far for me to drive to even make it worth it. So maybe it'll catch, you know, get more popular around here.
Yeah, I hope so. It seems to be one of the best things for getting people into it. It's very low cost of entry. You just have to have your full gear like normal. Some people are using more motocross, but there's a lot of people using their road racing kits, I see. And on Sunday, I actually just bought a 2021 Kawasaki KLX 300 Supermoto. So I'm going to be using that for like track days. And this year, I'm going to be an MSF, Motorcycle Safety Foundation instructor. So teaching people how to get their license and ride on the street and stuff like that. Basic rider courses, advanced rider courses, but also to ride up north at my cousin's place. He's got some land up there. So it'd be a good grocery getter, you know, street legal, but also I can use it for the track. And it's like a hybrid, like four different bikes in one. Might not be a purpose-built race bike, but I might race it too. So we'll see.
Because I have a Beta 350.
Okay. Yeah.
That's street legal, and I've been contemplating like going the supermoto route on that thing because I mean the dirt is fun, but it's hard for me. It's been hard to go from asphalt to dirt versus like a lot of people go dirt road racing.
Yeah.
So it's like I'm trying to unlearn a lot of things that I've learned, you know, by road racing instead, and it's challenging for me. I mean, I'm sure it's probably easier for a lot of other people, but like, you know, you go into a corner and dirt and like the front end's moving around and I'm just like, oh, something bad's gonna happen. But it's like, no, it's supposed to be moving around like that. And you're like trying to like, you know, retrain your brain to be like, no, it's like that's what it's going to do, it's supposed to do, versus like, no, everything needs to be smooth and linear. So
yeah,
I think it'd be fun to turn a Beta 350 into like a supermoto bike
for sure. You know, I started in road racing. I have had almost zero dirt experience, which has probably cost me several crashes I could have avoided having had at least a little bit or a season or two of just trail riding with your friends. And so getting the supermoto is like a way of me getting into that more, and having a hybrid, I can explore that and learn more because that dirt training is so valuable. I crashed a couple of times. My buddy invited me out to ride with him and he's like, yeah, ride my bikes. And I crashed three times, but there was zero damage, you know, and like it's my first time with slick tires in the dirt. It's like riding a jet ski. You have to be on the gas because you're not going to go anywhere otherwise, but you're going to be moving all over the place, and that's kind of normal. So it's just getting used to that and getting used to, okay, now you're on the pavement, but you still have dirt on your tires, so don't go crazy for a second. You got to get that dirt off your tires and then you can go harder. Right. So it's just finding that fine line of, man, I didn't even realize I was at the limit until it went away. It's a different feeling.
So you're on the deck. You're like, oh, dang.
I thought I was like 30% of my max there. I was like, oh, I didn't even know.
In your head, you're like, oh, I'm already through the corner, but you're still just laying on the ground.
Yeah. So, and then, yeah, most of them are super slow crashes, slow speed crashes. Twice I fell over. It was like a U-turn. And I just didn't go high enough up on the berm. I was like, I'll just take it lower. And it's just tucked, you know, like, I'm going 2 miles an hour. I felt like an idiot, but my handlebar fell down, you know, I hit the ground. It counts.
Yeah. Like I was going through the woods out here, like some single track stuff. And like, I was feeling good, feeling confident. So I was pushing a little bit more. And then there was like a super sloppy, muddy section. And I was just like going through it. And I started to turn. And I was just like, on my back, I'm like, what happened?
Yeah. You know, you can even high side a bicycle, I found out.
Nice.
I mean, if you hit your pedal just wrong on a stump and you're lean this way, it'll
just push
you the opposite direction. Oh, yeah.
That's awesome.
But that's why I always try to wear a helmet all the time, because if you hit your head too many times or wrong once, it can be not a good situation.
No, for sure. Like, I kind of got out of racing myself because I have like a clotting disorder. So if I hit my head or my pelvis too hard, I'll bleed out. So just like kind of got to weigh the pros and cons of riding, which sucks.
For sure. That's something you got to take into account. So tell me a little bit about your riding or your background experience.
Yeah, like I didn't grow up around bikes or anything. When I was like 19, I moved down to Florida, and you know, I thought I was going to be a cool guy and get a bike. Like, you know, I went to a dealership, bought a bike, and I didn't know how to ride. So I made my cousin ride it home for me. But it was just like, you know, being a young 19-year-old kid, you're just like, I'm gonna be so cool. Like, yeah. So I took it around in like, you know, these like private subdivisions and like kind of learned how to ride a little bit. And it's funny, it was like, this was kind of like right around when like that movie Biker Boys and stuff was like super popular. So it was like, oh, we gotta go to bike nights and, you know, blah, 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 like these meetups. So like, that was one of my goals, is to go to one of those things. So, so I was living in Clearwater, Florida at the time. And for us, like the spot to go meet at was either the beach, the Clearwater Beach, and just kind of hang out in front of this McDonald's, or on Saturday nights, there's this place called Buddy Byrights. It was like a kind of like a rent to own place, but the parking lot was where everybody met up, you know, on the weekends. So I was like, yeah, I'm going to go out and do that. And so, you know, I went out one night and like, you know, everyone kind of like hangs out and does their thing. And then they kind of organize a ride after that. So it's like, you know, it's like 10, 11 o'clock at night. And like, they're like, all right, we're going to go ride to Ybor or Tampa. So I was like, cool. I'm going to be cool and ride with these guys. And as soon as like the ride started, everyone's just like, bah! Like, up on one wheel and just like cutting cars. I'm like, oh my gosh, like I'm in over my head. Like,
yeah.
And the funny thing is like, they, of course they caused attention from the police and everyone took off, and I'm new to riding and I don't know what I'm doing. So I'm like, well, I don't want to be that guy. So I just kind of kept up with the other bikes and was like, well, this is what everyone else is doing, so I'm going to go with them. And after like we lost like the cops and stuff, like I went to a gas station and I was like, what am I doing? So I'm just taking myself home. So I kind of like went home and parked my bike and was like, this is nuts. And so I met this one guy down at the beach, and he was helping me do something on my bike. And he's like, oh, I got some videos of us riding. I was like, oh, cool, I'll watch them. And like, he's like, yeah, this night we're running from the cops. And I was like, oh, that's so cool. And like in his video, like I see this neon green ZX6R like come through a corner. I'm like, oh my gosh, that's me.
What are the odds?
So we didn't even know each other, but I was on the same ride with him when we ended up running from the cops. But it was crazy. Like, so I started, you know, figuring bikes out, and I started learning, like, I like the corners. So, you know, I spent a lot of time doing that and riding with, like, you know, fast people in the area. And the guys I kind of, like, teamed up with, you know, they used to be old CCS racers. And they're like, hey, you ever do track days or anything? I'm like, no. Like, I don't even know what that is. Like, what's a track day? And, like, you can ride your bike on a track. I'm like, no, tracks are for race cars. Like, not bikes. Like, what is that? So I went out and like, you know, borrowed like leathers and boots from these guys and went out for my first track day. And I was kind of like a cocky young kid. So I was like, oh, I'm going to go and I'm going to be fast.
Like, you're about 20?
Yeah. I'm like, watch out, everybody. I'm super fast. So like we went to Jennings, and like, you know, the expert class goes out first. So I'm like watching that. I'm like, oh my gosh, like that's what people can do on, like, you know, that was my first introduction to like road racing, and it was just like blew my mind. So of course my first track day, I'm in the novice class, so I go out and I crash the first session.
Oh no.
At that time I had the 50th anniversary R6, like the yellow one.
My first session
I was like super pumped, and I was like, yeah, I'm gonna do this. And I crashed, and it was turn one at Jennings. Just like, so the bike had some damage, you know, I come in the crash truck, and it was cool at the time. Like a lot of people were testing, and you know, R6 was, you know, it's quite popular. So I got to go around and, you know, buy some parts off people, like a stator cover and handlebars and, you know, zip ties and duct tape. And, you know, I was back out there for the day. And after that day, I was like, this is amazing. So I started doing more track days, and I was like, all right, I'm going to get my CCS license. And so then I jumped into CCS for probably half a year. And it was like, kind of like right around like when the housing market kind of tanked. So when that happened, I had to get out of, you know, racing and everything, but that was kind of like my introduction or my jump into like road racing, which then, you know, just kind of took off from there, honestly.
Yeah. And all this time you're, you know, working on your own bike and tuning your own machines and doing everything yourself, I assume, except for, you know, a hand here or there from a friend.
Yeah. So you're almost like forced to be a mechanic when, you know, when you crash and stuff. It's just like, well, the only way to do it is to do it. And, you know, then it starts to become like second nature. Like, and then, you know, every bike is built on the same premise. You know, how they may set something up is a little bit different, but the same idea is there, and it all applies. Like, you know, this bike's airbox might look like this, but it's still an airbox. Like, so right. It's like everything translates pretty well. And that's really what I would do. I just work on my own bikes and build a couple of bikes from eBay. And I don't know if you can see, I'm building one.
Oh yeah.
In my living room now.
Yamaha back there.
Yeah. So it's a 2006 frame, and I have a 2015 R1 front end on it. So the goal is to make it like the newer R6. Like I have that ECU and everything, but all the parts are translatable. So it's easy to do, but
yeah,
it's cheaper to go that route.
For sure.
Use as much of the older parts as you can until you need like the newer stuff.
Yeah. And there's so many parts out there for that platform bike. I mean, I'm sure you can find just about anything for it pretty easily.
Yeah, and it's crazy. Like a lot of the used parts have gone up in price lately towards nuts, where I'm like, I'm going to sit tight until they kind of settle out again. Cause you know, you get used to like how much something costs, or so you know what you should or should not buy, or it's like, if it's going to cost that much, I'll just buy it brand new.
Sure. Well, but that's a perfect transition for my plug of my business. I sell 34 brands of motorsport parts, from motorsport cycle road racing to, you know, modified sport bikes, of course, mostly. But I also do some mountain bikes and some car parts. So trying to branch out into the whole motorsports racing scene. But stuff from like driven racing to M4, Akrapovic, Spark, Italian, exhaust, Bonamici, you know, tire warmers. I have some takeoff tires. And Revit is my biggest gear brand right now. So suits, boots, gloves, jackets, trousers, wind gear, rain gear, a little bit of everything.
That's awesome.
Yeah, man. And
do you sell used parts too, or is it just kind of like?
So I started with a batch of like 1,000 or 2,000 items of like CDs, DVDs, you know, old race parts that I had, motorcycles, scooters. But I'm trying to get away from that stuff and trying to get into just the drop shipping and the selling the motorsport brands, because that's where the big money is. I just did all that stuff to gain a reputation, to get feedback, so that you can get the vendors, you know. So
Super cool.
Yeah, man. So I've been an entrepreneur selling stuff my whole life. At one point, my parents got worried. They're like, you're selling all your stuff. Aren't you sentimental about this? Like, no, I want the money out of this thing I don't use anymore. Like, I just put it on eBay, you know, or Craigslist at the time. I had realized I sold every single one of my takeoff tires through Craigslist. And I was like, man, I got something here. So I started buying takeoff tires. I have a whole bunch over here. I threw it in my basement.
Nice. Yep.
But yeah, I started buying takeoffs and selling them, trying to get away from that too, because sometimes people have discrepancies over your wear amount that you attribute it to. So I try to take high quality pictures of everything. You know, I'm not trying to fool anybody. And so you just try to do the best you can. But yeah, I use eBay and Amazon and my own website, Shop ESR, and the hub is ericswanracing.com. So you can find a lot on there.
Yeah, I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, man. And Motul suspension setup tool is a big one. So normally if you're setting your sag or doing different tuning on your bike, it might take three people, one, you know, sit on the bike, one to measure and one to hold the bars and all that. Well, this is a tool you can do it all yourself with one person. So
that's awesome.
Anything that's a chain based chain based device or machine will be able to be used, like an ATV or a dirt bike or a motorcycle, snowmobile, maybe even bicycle, you know, anything like that.
Because I'm sure we've all been there. We're like, babe, just hold the bike.
Yeah.
Hold the bike.
Like, why? I'm not doing that.
Yeah, I need to read the zip tie.
but I mean, most motorcycle racers, I wouldn't say consider themselves full mechanics, but have still put together a machine from start to scratch.
Yeah, I've done it to where I bought a frame off of eBay for an R6 and bought every single part off of eBay and built a race bike just because. I need something new, so here we go. And you know, at those times it was pretty cheap to do, but it's still fun, and definitely you learn a lot from that you know, you can apply to road racing, or you know, just helping your friends out in their garage too.
Yeah, it's like a big puzzle that when you're done with it, it actually works.
Yeah, and it's funny, like you talk to car mechanics, they're like, oh, I'll never touch a bike. Those are, you know, it's too crazy. And it's like, you've done it so much, you're like, what? Like, that's like, it's almost like Legos.
Yeah, like, it's so really stripped down from a car.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like I have not a big problem working on bikes, but when it comes to my car, I don't know that I've done much to a car. I'll take it in for an oil change even, because like it's just easier and it's not worth my time.
Good. Well, and for me, like I grew up around car racing. Like my grandfather raced, it was like circle track dirt cars.
Yeah.
So my grandfather raced, my uncle, my dad, my brother, and like, so I've always been around like the mechanics of cars and the aspect of racing. And I used to be like pit crew for open wheel modifieds.
Okay.
Up in New York, and you know, I moved to Florida, got out of it, and you know, then got into bikes, and then somehow got into pit crewing in Moto America.
Yeah.
It was like, I try to tell people, I'm like, it's just like winning the lottery for me.
Yeah.
Like how it all came to be and happened, for sure.
So how do you even get word that there's a job opening for something like that? Did you apply? Did he pick you? Were you guys friends? Like, how does that happen?
So it's super, super weird. So like, I've been watching ever since I was on bikes, I got into tracks, and I started watching, you know, every racing that I could, motorcycle racing. So like, you know, I followed AMA and everything, and you know, their ups and downs, and MotoGP, World Superbike, you know, Isle of Man and stuff. And so I was listening to an interview with Kyle, and he was kind of talking about his program, and he was starting up this new thing called the Army, the KWR Army, where you like, you pay $120 and, you know, you put your name on the bike, and you know, you get like a shirt and hat, credentials to like kind of hang out in his area. And so for me, like I was out of racing, and to see somebody hustle and do it on their own, like, you know, I had so much praise and admiration towards them. So I'm like, dude, that's, you know, you're doing what most people wish they could do, and you're doing it on your own. So I'm like, heck yeah, like what's $120 to help somebody? Like, you know, that's half a tire. Like, so I signed up for his army, and this was like the year that he just got onto Ducati, when he started racing the V4R. And so you know, I was single, still single, but at the time I was single, and I was like, well, I'm not doing anything, so I'm like, well, why don't I just follow the series, like, because now, you know, you're kind of more invested into like somebody because in you know, now you're a fan and you respect what they're doing. So I was like, why don't I just go and like watch it? So the first AMA race I ever went to was Miller Motorsports Park in Utah. And so, you know, I was there with like my KWR Army stuff on, and, you know, I was going around the track and just trying to find a good spot to watch or anything. But like, you know, in one corner, the speakers weren't working well, or in another corner, the video wasn't working. So I was just like, you know, I was kind of getting frustrated, like, cause I'm like, I'm here to watch racing, but I can't hear the commentators and I can't see, you know, the other action. So I ended up like walking by Kyle's garage, and he saw like that I had like his stuff on for the Army, and he's like, hey, how, you know, kind of like, you know, how are you? Like, how's the racing going? And I was like, honestly, man, this sucks. And he's kind of like, what do you mean? I was like, you know, I can't hear or see. And like, I want to see. And so I was like, hey, do you mind? Like, can I come in your garage and, you know, watch the racing with you guys? And he's like, kind of like, oh, yeah, sure, whatever. So I went in there, and like none of his sessions were going on. So everyone was kind of like, you know, around the screen. You know, I'm sure, you know, like at the races when you're in like hot pit or something, like you got the video feed and the live timing feed. So we're all just kind of like sitting around like watching. I think it might've been like a super sport race before, you know, they had to get busy and start working on his bike. So we watch, and then I was still sitting there, and like everyone got up and started doing stuff, and I felt super weird and awkward. So I was like, hey, you guys need help? Yeah. And they kind of looked at me like, huh? I was like, yeah, like I feel weird. Like, you know, do you need any help with anything? Like, and so they're like, yeah, like go with Bob, Kyle's dad, and like pick the bike out of Park Ferme. I was like, okay. And so I started helping him out like for that weekend. And like on Sunday, like after the races, like I helped them load the semi, or at the time he didn't have the semi, but like helped them load the trailer. And then like after everything was done, they're like, hey, like, you want to come to the next round? I'm like, sure. So I funded like myself to like, you know, my flights and everything to go there and just kind of like volunteer my time just to like put in that work to show them like, you know, I'm serious and I have stuff to offer. So I just kept doing that until he's like, yeah, dude, like, you know, you're on board. And like, so it was awesome. And so, yeah, like that's why I always tell people, like, I won the lottery. Like, it just, my first Moto America race I've ever been to, I come out with like a pit crew gig.
Sometimes it just works out that way. You know, some people have a way of making things happen like that.
Yeah. And it was never weird for me, just because I've been around racing. I've been around, you know, a lot of it, and, you know, like famous racers and stuff. So it's never been like a weird thing for me. So it's just always been like a natural thing. So I was never like a super fan, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like where you'd make things awkward for people.
Right.
Yeah. But then I got like a girlfriend, and I kind of, she wasn't happy with me doing with Kyle. So I kind of backed out a little bit, and, you know, just kind of really messed up things I was doing at the time, and I regret it still to this day. So I hit Kyle up. I was like, hey man, like, you know, if you need help, like, you know let me know. And he's like, you know, kind of, he had his team set. I was like, well, you know, if Travis needs help, you know, let him know. And then Travis called me up, and he's just like, dude, like, you know, I hear you're available, like I'm doing this X, Y, and Z, and I need help. So I was like, dude, call me in. And then that's where I've been ever since now. So, and then now Kyle's not doing the superbike program right now, but it's just like everything kind of worked out to where I'm still in the paddock and still able to be there.
Yeah. And looks like Kyle's going to be defending his Harley title.
Yeah. And those boys are looking strong, and everything I've seen, you know, they're testing everything. It's just like nuts. Like, I think Kyle said at Indy Motorsports Park. I think he's within a couple seconds of his superbike time there on his bagger. So it's just like that boy's on fire right now. So it's, you know, they better come with something for sure.
Think anybody's got anything for Kyle this year in the bagger class?
Probably Travis.
Yeah. Because they're probably training at the same events.
They do. I know Kyle has spent more time on the bike than Travis has been able to, but I know Travis is definitely hungry too. And, you know, what they've done, you know, at Daytona, like the testing and stuff. So I know Travis is pretty hungry. You know, it's your brother. You want to beat your brother.
Well, of course. You want to beat him by 10 seconds if you can, right?
Yeah. I mean, like my older brother, like anytime we race something, I'm always like, I got to get him.
And then I'm sure the crew is biting their fingernails when they come up to pass each other because you're like, oh, I hope it doesn't take him out.
Yeah, right. Like they're just going to tangle each other up. Because I know Indian, you know, they're pretty serious this year too. You know, they got Bobby Fong for a couple rounds and it's crazy to see like how thick the field is with like amazing riders. So where it could be a dogfight for sure with some of these guys and the bikes. I know it started off as just kind of like a, hey, come out, let's get some new fans. But now it's just like, you know, these real road racers are seeing the potential with it. And, you know, even though people online or whatever talk about it negatively, but what they can do on those baggers like just destroys what a lot of people can do on a sport bike on a track. So it's cool to see like those real road racers come out and kind of show what it's capable of, because I'm sure it's going to grow, and especially maybe even track days and club racing, like it could be a thing. And as far as like Moto America goes, it's cool to get new fans.
Oh, for sure. I think it's a great thing all around, and bring any kind of bike. Just it doesn't have to be a 600, right? I mean, there's Twins Cups bikes out there that are that grid's getting bigger by the day, it seems like.
Yeah, the Twins Cup is a awesome class now. Like, you know, like the SV650 back in the day, like that was the Twins bike. Like that was the, you know, throw a Gixxer 600 front end on that thing, and you know, you got a proper race bike. But you know, now Aprilia, you know, they've made, you know, dedicated track bike for that. The R7 came out, and it's just like that class is really, really cool as far as like what manufacturers are kind of coming out with nowadays. Cause it's weird to see like the shift of like what people buy. Like, you know, years ago, like when I bought my first bike, it was, you better be on a sport bike, a 600 or up, or, you know, you're not a cool kid. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it was just that popularity of things. But now like you see people, you know, they're on Groms, or, you know, they're on, you know, the R3s and, you know, the Kawi 400. And it's just like, that's like a normal start off point for, you know, bikes, which when you're younger, like years ago, that wasn't, you wouldn't want to be caught dead on a smaller bike because you know you get razzed, but now it's accepted. So, you know, having like, you know, Yamaha and, you know, Aprilia bring those bikes out is it's cool because it appeals to that market and those people that are interested in those bikes, because, you know, sad, like interestingly enough, like they're buying those more than they are buying the middleweight or the super bikes. Like it's,
yeah, I mean, I would always advocate for people to start on the smallest thing possible that's highway legal. Like, I started, my first bike was a Ninja 250, my first bike, you know, and it was a good learning experience. You don't need a 600 on the street because a 600 is as fast as a Ferrari, basically.
Yeah, and my first bike was a 04636.
Yeah, which is a fast as hell bike. That'll do at least 150 stock.
Yeah, and like it was funny, like the first time I ever like really got on the gas, like it took my stomach away like a roller coaster ride. I was like, oh my gosh, like that's a bike, like and then, you know, but you get used to it, so it's just weird but cool to see like that transition to where starting off on, you know, lower displacement bikes is okay, or lower horsepower bikes, like, you know.
Well, also that 08250 was the first year of the different styling, where they took the 600 styling into the 250. And so nobody knew I had a 250. It looked like a 600, except if you were into bikes, you might notice. But I don't think it was written on the side of the bike. Like, it was hidden.
Because, yeah, like the EX500 and those things, like way back when, like, you could tell, like, is that rise was on the bars.
It's obvious.
Single seat for, you know, both rider and passenger. And yeah, I was just like, you're like, I can't be caught dead on that thing. Like, I don't want to be made fun of.
Yeah. And it's still an 08250 to go over 100 miles an hour. So, I mean, that'll beat most street cars out there.
No, absolutely. And it was weird to see like that transition, but it's good too, because you know, it gets people used to a bike and then what it can do. And then, you know, they get comfortable with speed and, you know, move up from there. But like, us, we were just stupid. Like, we want this fast bike and watch what I can do. And didn't generally end well.
Yeah. And I'm pretty sure that in other countries in Europe, you have to have like a graduated license before you can get bigger bikes, if I'm not mistaken. So we don't have anything like that in the States, but
no, you have to start out on the lower displacement bikes and then kind of like move up from there, or tier up, so to speak, which it's smart. And it'd be cool, like, if we did that here too, because, you know, too many people got throttle happy and sadly didn't end well for them. So it's like, you know, who knows what would happen if they had a smaller bike and moved up.
Yeah. I think it definitely makes you, there's so many stories of, oh, that bike was too fast for me, I couldn't handle it, I can't have bikes anymore, and they sell their bikes and never have one again. Well, that's right, because you got a Hayabusa for your first bike, and it was a drag racing bike, and it most people wouldn't be comfortable with that as their first bike. I wouldn't.
No, and a lot of times too, and like, oh, in the inverse, I'll tell people, like, well, you can ride a bike as fast as you want to or as slow as you want to, like, it, you know, like, even though it is, it's got, you know, 120 horsepower, like, you can still ride it slow. But I mean, us young people were just like, go.
I had a hard time controlling myself on a 600 on the street, which is why I got to the racetrack. So I stopped riding on the street for like 10 years, and this is my first street bike. So I'm just waiting on, you know, title and license and insurance and all that stuff. I'm pretty excited to start riding again, because it's been so long. But on a 300, it's going to be hard to get myself in trouble.
True, yeah. The acceleration isn't there as far as like the other bikes, where it's just like, oh, I'm at 140 already.
Right. 2 seconds in, you're already within the first gear of your bike, you're already breaking the speed limit on the highway.
On most bikes, for sure. And like, I remember I got pulled over so many times. I didn't have an endorsement yet. So they're just kind of like, at the judge was like, get your license, or like, you know, we're going to kind of put a kibosh to this. So it was funny. Like, I'm going to like the rider safety courses on my 600 to get my license. And then like with other young kids like me that were like in the same situation. So we're like, we get off our sport bikes, hop on like the 250s for the class. And then like, all right, take a lunch. And then we're out of the parking lot, just like, like on one wheel.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't make sense. I mean, I drove to my driver's ed class.
Yeah, right.
Like, you can't do that. What are you doing?
I'm pulling up like, I'm going to get in trouble. Like, I don't have my license. I'm trying to get my license, but I'm showing up on a, you know, 636. Like, they're going to say no.
But yeah, I don't know if the age should be lowered or what, because it seems like a lot of people can handle it earlier.
It's almost like kind of like the countries that have drinking ages that are low, like, but they're more mature.
Right. I was so always like, interested in like how my mom and dad were like operating the car. I was like, how are you? I see that I could do that. Like, I get this. Doesn't look that complicated.
So yeah, I think it would be cool, like, if it did like lower it, and you know, you just got people used to it, because then it wouldn't be like a foreign thing to when they did get into it, you know, they found themselves in trouble.
Yeah.
And like, you know, you're an 18-year-old kid and you're like, oh, I'm going to drink, and you just get rowdy, versus like countries where the drinking age is, you know, not set, and they act like mature adults.
Yeah, because you can have one with your dad when you're 8 and you're like, oh, that was fine, I get that now. And you're not like looking for it because it's a forbidden thing.
Yeah. So it's just like when you escape and go do it, you're like, and go off and do stupid stuff, versus just like, yeah, it's normal, it's commonplace, like whatever.
Yeah.
So yeah, it'd probably be good if they did lower the age on that, for sure.
I mean, everybody's different though. I was starting when I was 14, like as soon as you possibly could, getting your permit and all that stuff and going through driver's ed. But I just talked to somebody recently who was, I think he's 34. He's never gotten his driver's license. I mean, I said, like, do you have a DUI or something? Like, is there a reason? He's like, no, it scares me. And I'm like, okay. I mean, I've never heard that before, but I understand. It is a very dangerous thing. I get that. I'm not trying to dog on anybody. Everybody has their own fears, but I don't know how I would survive. I thrive on being independent and free. And if we couldn't drive anywhere, it'd be difficult.
Yeah. Like my older brother and I, like we would sneak off in my mom's car.
Yeah.
None of us could drive, but he'd be like, let's go. And we're like, he's 15. I'm 12. Like we're cruising like the side streets and stuff. But yeah, I was like the same way. Like, you know, 16 years old, the day of my birthday, went and got my permit. And then as soon as I did, like, we had to do like an 8-hour course. Like, as soon as I finished that, I was like, all right, sign up for my license. And I think I had my license within a month of me turning 16, because I was like, go, 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 go.
But, and my parents never wanted me to have a motorcycle. So I had to prove to them that I was going to do it safely. So I took the MSF classes that I'm going to be teaching. I took the basic rider course. I took the advanced rider course. And it's all for street stuff. It's not any racetrack. It's just parking lot and tests and making sure you can ride and within cones and flow spaces. And, you know, I think that really helped me, because it forced me to take the right steps and to get the schooling and to wear the gear, because I didn't know what a squid was. I didn't know you shouldn't wear flip-flops. Nobody told me. The dealership doesn't tell you anything. You know, they're like, here's your keys, have fun, don't hurt yourself. But
yep, I think we've all been a squid for a moment.
Oh yeah, the t-shirt and shorts. I mean, I always wore a helmet. And then now I always wear earplugs on the racetrack. I mean, you can't ride on the racetrack without earplugs very well.
That is too funny, for sure. Because yeah, like my mom, she didn't want me to get a bike, and she came down to Florida to visit, and we went to dinner, and I was like, I'm taking my bike. And so after dinner, she's in her car. And so like we take off from a light and she goes ahead of me, and I just kind of like, it's like stand up on one wheel. And like we get back to my house and she's just like, why would you do that?
So are you a big stunter?
No. When I was younger, like that was cool. Like, you know, I'm not gonna lie, like, you always did stuff like, oh, I'm gonna do this for girls. So like I learned how to do wheelies, but now like I don't really care about anymore. Like I guess I'm more like track oriented, but it was just like at the time it was just fun just to, you know, clutch one up and catwalk it for a while.
For sure. It's impressive. It's a nice trick.
Yeah, like being honest about it got me out of a ticket once. Like there was a car, it was like spring break down in Florida, and it was like car full of like hot chicks. So I'm like, oh yeah, I'm gonna look so cool. So like I did a wheelie and I was like, you know, like we're doing like 40, so I'm just kind of like just kind of rocking it, just sticking with them, just like looking at them like an idiot. And then I wasn't paying attention, and then I put it down, and like this, I was like, whoop, I was like, fuck. So like I pull in this neighborhood, and the guy goes, you gotta be the dumbest MF-er, you know, alive. I'm like, oh, like here we go, like, you know, I'm going to jail. So just, and he's like, what were you thinking? I was just like, you didn't see that car full of girls? And he's like, He's like, I've been there. He's like, I get it. I understand. He's like, next time you do, really, just make sure there's no cops in the intersection. And he's like, you come by me doing a wheelie. And everyone at the light is like looking at me like, aren't you going to go do something? So he's like, I had to pull you over. And he's just like, kind of like, just get the F out of here. I'm like, oh my God, like, thank you so much.
Wait, wheelies are illegal?
Yeah.
Oh no. When did that happen?
Like, yeah, I was just testing my new clutch.
Just tell him it was a power wheelie. I didn't mean to.
Yeah, just got away from me.
But yeah, I saw there was a campaign not too long ago to make wheelies legal again.
Really? I did not see that.
Why not? I mean, anybody who's doing a wheelie is taking it out of their own power to do so. They feel like they can probably do it safely enough.
And they are fun, and it is cool to do, like, especially, like, our biggest thing was, like, we have so many bridges down there, so it's, like, you know, if you can rock a wheelie across this bridge, like, that was, like, the cool thing, especially, like, the bridges that had, like, humps in them. It was, like, oh, if I can do this, like, get over this crest and stuff.
And it probably makes it more difficult with the wind coming over a bridge.
So down in Florida, like, there's this very popular bridge called the Skyway Bridge. It's like huge, kind of like San Francisco kind of bridge. Like, people use it to, you know, end stuff. So yeah. Like, I did that one time where I like got up it, came down it, and then at the end there's like a big curve. So I'm like, all right, like, still in it, doing the curve, set it down. It was just like, because yeah, the wind was pushing you, and it was like, so I'm more hanging off, not realizing like I had my handlebar cocked a little bit. So when it set down, it was just like, started flicking me left and right. And that was the only thing I think to do was just like grab a handful of throttle, which helped me because it like unweighted the front end so I could actually grab the tank flapper back. But after that, I was like, no wheels for the rest of the day.
Sometimes it's like your front tire hasn't been moving for 20, 30 seconds or longer. So it's got zero speed now. And now you're going 50 miles an hour. It's going to go from 0 to 50 in like a tenth of a second.
That was always cool. Cause like, as soon as it would touch, it'd be like
a puff of smoke.
Chirp. It'd chirp and like a puff of smoke would come up through like the gaps.
But if you don't have a stabilizer on your bike and you put it down and it's wobbly like that, you could be in for some hurting.
Yeah, I've never got into steering stabilizers. Like, I never liked them.
Now, for racing organizations, they're mandatory, though.
Which is weird. And, like, I would always set mine at, the lowest setting to feel something. I don't know. For me, like, I like the front end feel. So it was just, like, when that thing was set really tight, like, you couldn't feel the grip or, like, what the front end's doing. And so I was just, like, I don't like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So it's like a happy medium.
Just, yeah, so I'd always try and turn that thing down as much as I could, just so I could feel it somewhat.
But I've had sometimes, like, on the highway where you're going over an overpass, right? And then there's some elevation drop down. And then your front wheel might lift and you'll a little bit of a tank slapper coming on if you're not careful.
It catches you up pretty quick. Like, it'll wake you up if you're not paying attention.
Can't be sleeping there. Yeah. That's why I never would want to have a cruiser, because I feel like on a sport bike, you're on your toes a little bit. You're like lean forward. You're like ready. But on a cruiser, you're just kind of like, you're like laid back. Like, I hope nothing happens.
Cause yeah, I'm just like relaxing. Control, like you're laying in the sofa, just like,
yeah,
it's comfy.
I mean, it sounds relaxing, but I don't know if that's the stance that I want.
No. And it's like, now getting older, it's just like, now I kind of want the comfy stance. Like, going on like a 2-hour ride on a sport bike, now I'm like, oh, my shoulders.
You just need like a little a back protector, a back seat, like a seat back.
Like a king and queen seat.
Yeah, sticking up a little bit.
Yeah, I'm like, get me off this thing. Like, oh.
Is it normally like back and shoulders for you, or neck?
Shoulders, like. For me, it's shoulders from like crashing and stuff, like, you know, breaking my shoulders and now it's just painful.
And now they have all these airbag suits that are becoming mandatory. I think that's a big step for the industry.
Which is cool. You know, I've never had that. And, you know, I was riding when, you know, they didn't even care if you had a back brace or a back protector. Like, so it's interesting to see how it does evolve as far as like safety goes. Because yeah, the airbag definitely could help some of those crashes. You can get into like the weirdest crashes that wouldn't be anything, but then turn into something. Like, I had probably like a second gear get off, you know, it was like just a low side, you know, tuck the front, bike sliding. You know, you slide in the same direction, but like the bike hit the edge of the track and just flipped and stopped. So I'm sliding across the track and I like see it. I'm like, oh no. Like,
and right towards it.
Yeah, I'm like, this is gonna hurt. So I just like kind of like just tucked my head and smacked on the bike and, you know, ended up breaking my shoulder and everything. So it's just like something that's so you wouldn't even think about, but just like a weird coincidence that happens within that crash. And it's like, all right, well, I'm out for a while. Like,
yeah. Sometimes you gotta bite the bullet on those. You know, I wrote a paper in college on the helmet law. I wanted to research it myself, and Michigan has repealed the helmet law. We don't have one anymore. So the day that happened, you know, a couple people died, I think, at least one. It's like, it seems silly, but their argument is against it is that there have been documented cases of people falling over at 2 miles an hour and a weird thing happens where they hit their neck strangely wearing a helmet and they die. So yes, helmets can kill you also, but it's way better to wear one, obviously, than not wear one. I mean, what are the percentages of people who die that way? Like at those freak accidents, it's like, it's an anomaly. 1 in 3 trillion people, you know? Yeah.
No, it is funny like to think about stuff like that. Like I know like Florida, no helmet law. And I rode my bike once without a helmet and like I would never do it again. Like it was like the most terrifying thing.
It's so loud, you get bugs in your face, there's rocks and they're
yeah, like I got smacked in the head with a bug and that hurt. And you know, for the day I was just like, I don't need one, I'm just going to the beach. Like I thought it'd be cool, like I'll just go to the beach on a bike. But then I was like, no, like I need a helmet after this. Like it just everything felt so unsafe and just like tense. I was like, ah, oh, like I wish I had my helmet.
For sure. Is there anything else on your mind you wanted to talk about today?
No, man, I think we touched on a lot of stuff.
Yeah, so I got a few podcasts I got to post before I get to yours, but it won't be too long, a couple of weeks probably. I'm actually heading to Daytona tomorrow. I'll be taking a flight to New York and then to Charlotte and then to Daytona. So it's a little bit of a puddle jumping, but I'll get there.
Yeah, I get there tomorrow night.
Okay.
I think I land about 9:30 tomorrow.
Oh, nice. So I'll be working the event for doing air fence. I don't know how much they need, but I'll be a body and hands if whatever they need me to be doing. And then I'll be doing a track marshal corner working for the rest of the weekend and tearing down on Sunday.
Nice.
So
yeah, I'll be there. Yeah, hit me up if you're around. Like, I'll be there. I won't be working just because we're not doing any Superbike or Stock 1000 stuff. Travis will be on the Harley. So I'll just kind of be hanging around, you know, that garage.
Sure. So to speak. I don't know where I'll be. They assign you every time to a different corner, it seems like. But I'm just happy to help out.
Cool. Yeah, I got your Instagram, your email. So I'll hit you up to see if you want to do something after.
For sure, man. Good to talk to you, and I'll see you this weekend.
For sure. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Have a good one, man.
Yeah, man. You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.